I bring greetings from Nigeria once more. And it's been a wonderful week for me being here at the mission conference. And it's been great. So my wife called about 3 days ago and she said, "How is Northern Ireland?" And I said, "Oh, it's awesome. I said, look, Northern Ireland is the last bus stop on your way to paradise. It's such a beautiful, peaceful place. I've been to so many places, and I'm not really worried about going into military and police checkpoints all over the place. It's just so nice and so peaceful. And this is because coming from Nigeria, where I'm coming from, and like we said earlier on, it's Nigeria, according to Open Doors, is one of the most difficult and dangerous places to be a Christian, and that is true. It's because in the last 10 years, 10 years effectively, even though we've had persecution even long before now, but the last 10 years have been so intense because of the totalized violence that we've now seen introduced by Boko Haram. Then the Boko Haram split into two, and then now we have Islamic State in West Africa, ISWAP, but now coupled with a radical Fulani Islamic militant sect that has now ravaged the central region of Nigeria. Now, this Nigeria, just particularly where I come from, is made up of basically, it's mainly made up of predominantly Muslim north and Christian south. And so Jos has consistently been the fourth line in this crisis that we've seen in the last 10 years. And when I say violence, sometimes it's difficult for me to express because it looks like it's coming out of a movie. It's happening in this day and age where you think there should be more sensible, more logical, and an effective government that should be able to stop the killing of people in a nation. Unfortunately, that's not what we're seeing in Nigeria. With all the killings that is happening almost every now and then, as a matter of fact, this year alone, like has been mentioned earlier on, actually more than 3,000 people have been killed. Other figures put it almost 6,030 something, depending on who you are talking to. But you have a government that is in power, but with the massive corruption that is ongoing, the complete, sectional bias that comes with those that are in government, because of the radical Islamic movement. And now, in our day and age, when you start talking about violence, especially when it has to do with Islam, then you have a pushback. Because people now begin to think you are Islamophobic or you're trying to create hatred against Islam. But that's far, far, far from the truth. The fact is, we have a militia group that is well-armed, well-organized, and well-funded, and is devastating predominantly Christian central regions of Southern Kaduna, Plateau, and Benue states. These are the central regions in Nigeria, and of course, all the way down to Taraba and Adamawa states. So it's intense. It's so intense. But you see, now, again, because of the fear of the pushback, what we're having, again, is we're having both my government and of course, even Western powers, not wanting to get involved. So it is explained as just a fight for economic resources caused by climate change. It's as if climate change just happened only in Nigeria and not anywhere in the world. So people can be killed because of climate change. And because now it's dismissed as, oh, it's just an ethnic or tribal fight. But even if, for the sake of argument, that is what is going on, what government will stay and watch thousands of people being killed all the time? So that's the kind of pressure that we face all the time. And I can give you the examples of how militarized these communities are. Villages are attacked in the middle of the night from nowhere. And hundreds of people come in vehicles and in motorbikes with all kinds of weapons, AK-47s. They surround a village and set it ablaze and keep shooting. Anybody running away is shot down or is cut down with a machete. And that's what happened with Rachel, our last daughter that we adopted because those that attacked the village had killed, she saw her grandparents and her parents being killed. And she has this big machete cut across her face. They cut her and they left her for dead. But by God's grace, she survived until we spent 6 weeks in the hospital with Rachel. And the same village, Veronica was also the mother who had a three-year-old child on her back when she was running. And she ran straight into this Islamist. And she pleaded for her life and the life of her child. But they said, well, the only way we will not kill you, because she was telling the child to please beg and say, don't kill me. And the child was repeating what the mother was saying. But they grabbed Veronica's hand, chopped off her index finger, and stuck it in the baby's mouth and said, we will not kill you if you eat your mother's finger. Of course, the girl couldn't chew a human finger. So they raised a machete and chopped the baby and killed the baby on her back. And Veronica, the only thing she remembered after fainting, was waking up and seeing her dead child with her finger still stuck on the child's mouth. And that's how vicious these attacks are. As a journalist, I've been to so many villages, more than 150 of them over the course of time. And I remember coming to this village where people ran when they had the gunshots and ran into a room. I don't know how many people were in that room. But usually I'll get a phone call late at night, a village has been attacked, please help us. And of course, phone calls are all over the place. You call the army or you call the police and they only arrive hours after an attack had happened. And this time around, I was one of the first that came to this village and of course saw all the mayhem, trying to get records and reports so that we can accurately tell what was happening. After that, I was on my way back home when I realized that at dawn, when I got into that room, I had walked into the pool of blood of the people that have been killed, and my jeans all the way almost to my ankle was already soaked in blood. And as I got home, I just didn't know how to carry that into the house. So I had to pull my trousers outside before I got in, because I was trying to also protect my children from seeing all these very, 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 very terrible pictures and events that are happening. But the thing is, like I said from the beginning, one is predominantly within a Christian community. Two, it is an event that is happening again and again and again. And I speak to you, even as of yesterday, another village was attacked. And you know, it's gotten so bad and it's become the norm that we can only say, oh, well, a village was attacked and only two people were killed. And so that is okay. And that is now becoming the norm across the central region of Nigeria. And it's so sad that you get into this kind of frustration. And I got so frustrated, really. I got so frustrated, even as a pastor, that because of the divide and the killings, it's created so much hatred and division within the Christian and the Muslim community in Jos that Christians do not even cross the street into a community that is predominantly Muslim. And my church was located just within that divide. So I had discussed with my church leadership team, because just weeks before, a church, St. Finbar's Catholic Church, not too far from where I was bombed, and over 30 people were killed. And here I was sitting and with the advice of one of my church leaders that said, look, let's get an AK-47 in this church. At least, whatever happens, we have the responsibility to protect our congregation. If anybody was running towards the church with a gun or they were coming with an explosive device, at least we can do something about it rather than just wait and get killed. And knowing, I mean, as a reporter, I knew quite a number of areas where there was a big black market of where they sell guns. Unfortunately, I must add, some of them coming from our soldiers, selling them into the black markets. But I met this friend and I said, what does it take to get an AK-47? And at that time, he said it was going to cost me almost £1,000. And I didn't have that kind of a money. But I came back and I sat down in front of the church and I was contemplating what to do when a little girl that was selling, about 7 years old, was selling what we call granite on a tray. And I called her and I bought, but I realized it was a Thursday morning and this little girl was not in school. So I said, why are you not in school? And she said to me, oh, my parents can't afford my fees. I said, why? Then she explained that her father was killed in the crisis. So I said, well, go and tell your mother that this pastor in this church will pay. So as the girl walked away, I felt that, well, it's either she didn't want to go to school or she may not say, get playful or either forget or something. So I thought it would be good, let me just go with her, see her mother and tell her mother myself. So as the girl was walking away, then I realized that she was heading towards a Muslim community. That was when it dawned on me that she was a Muslim. And Christians don't go into that community. Actually, I was aware that weeks before then, a police officer was killed in that place. But anyways, I walked and went into that place, asked to see the girl's parents. They called the imam who met with me and decided that, well, they'll think about it. I should come back a few days later. And I came back a few days later, and they met the mother of this girl, a wonderful, wonderful Muslim woman who came and knelt, typical of an African tradition, and thanked me for wanting to help her daughter. And then she explained that there are four other children that were not in school. So I thought, well, I could help the four. It wasn't really much to pay primary school fees for children like that. But then I asked her, but if you're sending your child to Hawks so that you can feed the family, can't you do something? She said she had no skill. And I said, well, I'll get somebody to teach you. And then she told me that she had the husband also had other wives as a Muslim. And I said, well, bring them. And anyway, just bring anybody that, one teacher to one person or 10 people, it doesn't matter. It's still a teacher, they will be taught. But the day we fixed, 15 women showed up. And we started, but by the end of 6 months, there were 82 Muslim women, all widows, and 6 months down the line, they went to 208. But all these ones also had their children who were not in school that went to over 145. So I called my Archbishop Benjamin Kwasi and I said, I'm in trouble. Please help. But the diocese took over that. And over a year, we now have wonderful women. They've learned how to do one thing or the other. They were helping their families. And this day we were in church on Sunday morning, and then there was siren all over the place. There was so much commotion. And soon after the service, I stepped out of the church, and here was this imam who came to me and said, Hassan, I'm so sorry. It has nothing to do with us. I said, what are you talking about? He says, the bomb. I said, what bomb? He said, look, incidentally, while we were in service, a young radicalized youth was heading towards the church with an explosive device, and one of the women that I had been interacting with noticed that. So she called the army in a checking point that was not too far from the church, and then they alerted and arrested him with the device, and the siren we heard was the anti-bomb squad taking away the device. And the imam said to me, he said, Hassan, I promise you, you've shown us love and you've shown us friendship. As long as we're in this community, nothing will happen to your church. We will protect your church. And I stepped back, I thanked him. But when I got home, I felt so bad, and because of what I thought at the beginning, what I really wanted to achieve with an AK-47 is what this little 7-year-old girl brought to bring a whole Muslim community protecting my church. And ever since, it's been a wonderful, wonderful interaction we had with this group. So the thing is, just like we read today from the reading, the love of Christ compels us. It's compelling, not just compelling us to be Christians and to be good to our neighbors and to show love. No, but the love of Christ also carries us through and supports and goes with us in everything that we do. And I have experienced this love, this protection that has taken me from one place to the other as we continue to show in all the tragic, deadly situation in Nigeria. Brothers and sisters, I will tell you that the Lord is moving mightily in communities. In Borno State, where Boko Haram is still very active, we met as churches, pastors across different churches and denominations, and we have worked out how to help those communities. And I must also add, with help from all the mission organizations that have been in Bangor this week, all of them, so many of them are there in Nigeria. Actually, almost all of them are there in one part of Nigeria or the other, working very hard. to continue to express this love despite the challenges, despite the risks. And I must add, a number of some of these organizations have lost people there, but we continue to work in there. And with these pastors, we decided that as much as we provided help and hope, but the Lord also has given us a command. And the command is to go and make disciples of all nations. And the Bible did not say when it is safe or when it is less risky or when there is no danger. No, the Bible just simply said, go. And he said, this sign shall follow you. And so we agreed with these pastors that we will go ahead and plan and design how best we can carry the gospel. And I must tell you, friends, that 3 years down the line, having worked out our strategies, I won't go into details of that, to protect the communities and the people that are working, but to say that we went straight into those villages that are still controlled by Boko Haram in our own small strategic way, and we've had more than 200 Muslims give their lives to Jesus Christ. And it's been a wonderful experience. But I will conclude this talk today by simply also expressing gratitude to all of you who have been standing with one organization or the other, who have been working with one organization, one mission group or the other, because in where we work, especially let me speak for myself, where I work, it is your prayers that has kept someone like me alive till today. Otherwise, I have no reason to be here. I can give you one story after the other of how the Lord has saved me, has protected me going from one village to the other, trying to reach the vulnerable, trying to reach those that are attacked, trying to reach victims, and to bring help to these communities. Of course, first thing in the morning when you go out and there are gunshots and everything, you don't kneel, go on your knees on the street to pray. No, you run. And that's what you do. However, but you know, the confidence we have is that we have Christians all over the world praying. And many of you have followed the prayer bulletins and the prayer alerts that have been sent and posted all over the place. And you've been praying for us. So I'm reporting back to you from the field to tell you that the Lord is answering those prayers. That we in there, working every day, facing all these deaths and tragedies and pains and trauma, that the Lord in his love is moving us ahead. We walk in the love of Christ, and the confidence that we have is that the Lord indeed is there, and he's consistently, continuously been there. There's been no moment in time at all that I, for instance, would go out with any fear, because I've seen the Lord protect me so many times. As of 2014, I had a bounty on my head of about £100, and I was so disappointed because I didn't think I was that cheap, you know. But anyway, you know, well, in the local currency is very much, but you know, but I don't walk around with looking over my shoulders all the time and seeing which car is coming behind me. No, I won't live my life in fear, just as many other pastors as we continue to go into these communities, because we know that there are Christians, brothers and sisters, who are out there continuously praying for us, crying with us, and standing with us. And that's what you all have been doing. And we also want to say thank you. And as we do that also, we want to also say, even in our own challenges, we also know that you also face your own challenges and your own problems as well. So we also pray for you. We also pray for you. Because with my group of pastors, so I have about 350 in Maiduguri, another 250 in Jos, and another 150 in Zonkoa, and in Abuja we just start another 150 pastors across denominations. And there's one thing I tell them every time we meet, that the Lord has given us the ministry to carry the light and the love of Christ to every community. And like we all agreed, that we will give our lives to this, even if we will die, we will do so, because the faith that we have is worth living for, and it is worth dying for, and we are happy to die for what we believe. We are just so excited to do that, you know. And I told them that, look, we will not disappoint God in this work, but also we will not disappoint the many Christians who are praying for us all over the world. There are those who are giving so much to support us. We can't disappoint them. No, we cannot. So we will keep working, we'll keep praying, we'll keep carrying the good news of salvation, we'll take it to every corner, but much more because we also see the transforming power in those communities, just like I had with my Muslim community. It's an amazing, wonderful experience. Throughout my coming to Bangor here to Northern Ireland, I've been having these Muslim women calling me. Actually, there's one that will persistently call. And I say, no, don't call me because the cell phone companies will charge you and they will charge me. She said, no, Pastor, we'll just, how are you? They call it, how is Ture? Ture, that's how is Europe. They believe I'm somewhere in Europe. And I said, no, I'm doing fine. They just said, no, just to let you know that we just want to see how you're faring. And it's just such an amazing, amazing thing to work with these groups and this community. So you see the transformation, and you continue to thank the Lord for what he is doing. And so, like I said, we will keep praying with you and praying for you as well because we understand your challenges. We also know of the challenges of even standing, even here to be a Christian, because it can be difficult. It can be difficult. We have the secularist movements. Secularism is coming in here. We have all the postmodernism and the post-truth, whatever that means. I don't know. But, you know, people believe that there is no truth at all. And if you say Jesus is the truth, the way, the only way, they think you are a bigot. They think you are being a fundamentalist. And sooner or later, you are forced to compromise your stand. And therefore, your strength and your faith in Christ begins to wane. And we raise all sorts of excuses, you know. But like I said, we will pray with you. We will ask you to stand also for your faith. Because when you stand, we also stand. And when you fail in your responsibilities, then we will be in trouble, just like Moses and Aaron raising his arm in the battle as Joshua was fighting. That as you stand, we are confident that nothing will happen because there are our brothers and sisters united in prayers, in support, and they are standing with us all the time. So we keep praying for you as well, and we say, please do not give up this faith. Do not compromise the faith that the Lord has given us all. And we are happy dying for our faith, but we will always say, do not compromise this faith that we are dying for. Because it is worth, you know, living for, and it is worth dying for. And let me leave with this last prayer from Steve Green that says, may those who come behind us find us faithful. May the fire of our devotion light their way. May the footprints that we leave lead them to believe, and the lives that we live inspire them to obey. May those who come behind us find us faithful. Thank you so much.